You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to the Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Cost of Living. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And with us, we have... Yes, that music you hear right now, that's the Klingon. Or is it?
Yes, it always is, brother. Kapla! The Klingon has returned.
Yes, you're one of our most popular guests. You know that, right?
I better be. I used to be your partner on another show.
Mm-hmm. Yep. People like it when the Klingon come on board. So we're here to speak about cost of living. But first, how have you been lately? Did you get furloughed for a day?
No, I took a day off.
No, I mean, did you end up getting furloughed here recently?
No, I'm one of the fortunate departments in the Department of Defense. I have a, we work on what they call a floating account, so we are not able to be shut down if the government shuts down.
Oh, there you go. All right. Cool. Well, how have you been? I think the last time we spoke was, let's see, it was for Newground. And you gave it a 0.5. I gave it a 1. James loved it too.
I am a granddad with granddaughter and grandson 3 and 4. Heidi had twins week before Christmas.
Yeah.
And today's my birthday.
Happy birthday!
The Klingon has turned. I'll let you all figure it out by looking it up on my Facebook.
Okay, we'll get started.
If you
on
can
that.
Find me.
Well, it shouldn't be too hard. I think. Yeah, we're friends.
Yeah, we're friends. You'll know it.
Yeah. All right. And here it is already. He says, I was a sailor. I am a sailor. I will always be a sailor. And where was that branch of service, friend?
In the Navy.
Yes, you can sail the seven seas.
In the Navy.
Yes, you can put your mind at ease.
In the Navy.
Come on, people, and make a stand.
In the Navy.
Can't you see we need a hand?
In the Navy.
Come on, protect the motherland.
That's right. All
Make
right.
sure you put it in there.
Oh, I will. You know, I hope so. So, you wanted to speak about cost of living, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
You guess? Oh, wait. That's right. I drafted you.
Yeah, you drafted me because I bailed out on you on another one.
What was that other one? I forgot.
I think it was in December.
Oh, okay.
Because of the grandkids.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It happens. Well, Cost of Living's synopsis says, Luoxana Troi is on board the Enterprise-D to hold her wedding ceremony. And she takes an interest in Worf's son, Alexander, encouraging him to adopt her carefree ways.
Oh my god.
This is the 20th episode of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 5. It was first aired on April 20th, 1992. It was written by Peter Allen Fields and directed by Winrich Kolbe. Guest stars for this episode include Majel Barrett as Luoxana Troi, Brian Bunzel as Alexander Rozhenko, Tony Jay as Minister Campio, Carl Struiken as Mr. Holm, David Oliver as young man. He's a young man. Albie Selznick as the juggler. Patrick Cronin as Urkel. Tracy D'Arcy as young woman. And I think young woman and young man were probably the ones that were arguing with each other until they discovered that the higher, the fewer. That moment gets a one. Anyway, George Eddy as a very, very bad poet. Christopher Halstead as first learner. You know, I watched the episode 20, 30 minutes ago, and I'm not sure what first learner is. And then finally we have Majel Barrett as the computer voice. So yes, she is mentioned twice. She's a guest star and a co-star.
Sorry, Lou, isn't the first learner the dude that looks like, the lion from Wizard of Oz in the holodeck? Is that who they mean?
That could be. See, what is the lesson of the day? Yeah.
What? Indeed, the higher the fewer.
Yeah, the higher the fewer. And we had to hear that two more times after this episode, or during this episode after that. The first one was really stupid. The second one was kind of funny. But anyway, Brian, as our guest, what's your brief impression of this episode?
Funny and silly.
Funny and silly. Okay.
This is an example of why Klingons do not like to interact with other people other than Klingon. But for this episode, it was good for Alexander to experience what he had to go through for this. The best part's the end. And that's all I'm going to say on it until we actually get through the end of the show.
Okay. And Doc, how about you?
So this is... Okay, so let me just kind of paint a scene here because, I didn't used to be a very big Luoxana Troi fan. And when I say didn't used to be, I mean, that's putting it mildly. I used to think that the episodes that she was in were horrendous and I would avoid them. When you throw Alexander into the mix, those feelings don't get more positive. They get more negative. And I think I generally will avoid this episode just because it's, Alexander and Troi heavy. As a result, there are bits of this episode I almost was watching for the first time because I had no recollection. I had no recollection of that sub story about the alien that's eating their way through the system. You know, I know they've done that before in other shows, but I would not have been able to pinpoint that beeline to this particular episode. So I watched this and I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it was, overall I thought it was great. And I don't know. I think that since I watched this back in the 90s, I've probably aged 20 years and become a big softie. Mm. What about you, Lou?
There are some moments of it's kind of fun. There are some funny parts, and that's sure I'm a big fan of the story, to be honest. However, it's got one of the it's got some pretty heartfelt, tender moments that I have been looking forward to discuss since we began this journey. But you blink, you'll miss them. And if you don't know the backstory, you'll miss them. But again, that's farther down the line too. So I'm a little torn on this, but hopefully we'll see how we feel. Okay, so we start out with four tubes armed and ready. And so you think, yeah, fire. We got a space battle, right? Everybody loves a good space battle. Romulans? No, it's the Ferengi. No, wait, it's the Cardassians. No, it's space rocks. We're blowing up an asteroid that's about to destroy a planet. So, Doc, you're our space expert, considering who you're talking to and the other guy on the line, too. What harm would an asteroid the size of the one they blew up do to the planet? Could that be a layer of devastation?
Okay, so I'm going to say yes, because I'm sure it could. I mean, it depends what planet it's fallen into. Depends on. Do they give a size of the asteroid? I don't quite remember.
But, I don't think so.
But Data specifically mentions that, you know, after they've attacked it, it's still got the core fragment large enough to cause problems. I'm somewhat surprised that neither phasers nor photon torpedoes will destroy it. That seems like a mighty tough asteroid. But the one thing I was surprised about, as I mentioned, I had no recollection of this opening scene. And, you know, I downloaded this I was actually watching this today. I downloaded it onto my phone. I was just watching it on the way into the work. And when I first started playing, I thought, I've got the wrong episode here. This isn't Cost of Living. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, I really enjoyed the little teaser. And if you look at the structure of the episode, you have this teaser, very exciting. Then you have the Alexander and Roxana part. And that goes on for about 25 minutes or so, over half the episode. And you don't hear anything about this teaser, or pretty much very, very, very little. And then you go on to this big race at the end, and you don't hear about Roxana. And it's a strange structure to the episode, and maybe that's one reason why I just could not remember this, or could not remember half of this, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the core of the asteroid is still heading for the planet, like you said, and it's still going to hurt. Right, it's still going to hurt. So their solution is not the torpedoes, not the phaser, not even the tractor beam, but let's get the deflector dish. It's amazing how they can get something that's supposed to send out vibrations to move things out of their way to actually fire something.
No, I don't think deflector dish is supposed to be vibrations. Not least because I'm not entirely sure how you'd define a vibration in the vacuum of space. Mm. So I've always considered it to be like a particle beam emitter kind of thing, not necessarily like a phaser or anything as like as powerful. But I always felt that it was more of something that is generally is pushing particles out there. One thing I was surprised about with the opener is that they do seem. They seem not quite prepared for the eventuality. So I don't know. It's almost as if this caught them on the back foot. The fact that they haven't had the discussion about what's it made out of, whether or not you want to use phasers, photon torpedoes, or deflector, it seems like this is really catching them off guard. Which is, if you think about it, it's that sounds a bit weird. They must have known this was happening. And, you know, for an asteroid to be heading towards a planet, if it's a populated planet, you've probably got a couple of decades, 100 years or so notice on this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, an asteroid doesn't fly at warp speed.
Mm-mm. Yeah, that's a good point, because I always wonder, sometimes they talk too much. They discuss the problem while it's occurring instead of doing something to fix the problem. So it just came out of nowhere, which is why they had to take care of the problem so late. Because, I mean, we got seconds before this thing impacts. So
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, hold on. Sorry. Okay, Brian, how about you? What do you think on the opening teaser?
The only thing I remember about this is Loxana interfering with Alexander, Worf and Alexander's routine, and teaching Alexander how to have fun. I don't remember about this asteroid thingy, so
he didn't watch the episode, folks, so we're gonna have to help him. Oh okay, I see what you're saying.
But I mean, in fairness, dude, that's exactly what I came to the table with. I had no recollection of this asteroid or
and
this,
I've been busy, so I haven't had a chance to review. I remember it just because I remember all the Roxana trying to find herself a husband, and then teaching Alexander how to have fun. But I don't remember the. I'm serious. I can't remember them worrying about some asteroid.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, James, it just you see this and go, "Oh, I got the wrong one." It just comes out of nowhere, but it's part of the B storyline. I thought it was the A storyline, but I don't know what storyline it is. But okay.
Actually, I have to say, I do like the I like the trivia questions of, can you put the B storyline into the A storyline? You know, a lot of that stuff, I find it very interesting, especially because I think probably from around season 5 of TNG, and certainly into DS9, certainly into Voyager, you very often have almost like for the best episodes, you always have intertwining storylines, and very often they will shadow each other, or they'll amplify the same kind of emotional hits that they want to mention. But sometimes it's a little bit more of a random draw, right? It's like, I'm going to get an A storyline randomly generated, and I'm going to get a B storyline out of the cupboard, and we'll mesh them together.
Yeah.
And this one in particular seems like it could have gone on to any of the episodes, right? It could have gone into next week's episode or the week after.
Well, sure.
There's no reason why these two events have to be connected, these A and B threads.
No. But Alexander and Worf are having family problems. It appears the orderly Klingon is having trouble with his disorderly child. Oh, no. By the hand of Kalas, that must stop.
Now, ways back, look at Mom.
Yeah. Well, that's true, too. Yeah. The listening to Worf and Alexander, you know something? I got to tell you something. I learned something about myself because I hate to admit it, but that is my daughter and I exactly to a T. You know, I told you to put your clothes in the soil or something or another. You did not. Yes, I did. You did not. I told you. But you said that yesterday. Well, I think yesterday. And her and I would go on and on and on about that. So I thought that was humorous to see myself on that in that argument, because I would have been exactly right there. However,
hey, Lou.
Huh?
Yours is an old. Yours is still pretty young. I went through all that. Plus, I went through the teenager issue.
Yeah. She's 16. So it's almost time for her to. Yes, it's almost time for her to get a car. Yeah, you're just lucky you're in Indiana, buddy. Yeah,
that's right, because I'd be in your face pointing at you going, ah.
So, but anyway, okay.
Good luck with your insurance.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, I already looked into that. They'll double. The rates will double. So he's being a kid. I mean, obviously he's just being a child. However, a contract? I never thought to try that. Is this really the... Oh, hey. Hey, he found his microphone or the camera. We got to get one for the doctor. However, is this really the best that Deanna can come up with? How about we draw up a contract? A fair and equitable balance between the father and the son. And Luoxana even later says something that makes perfect sense. Alexander does not follow the contract, he will be chastised. Well, what are you going to do if you don't follow the contract?
This contract. You can't make a contract with a Klingon. It's impossible. Even a Ferengi knows that part.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess the question is, can
at least
Worf...
not a written one.
No. I think it wasn't written. It was probably, verbal with Ferengi could pick a pot. Anyway, do you think Worf is justified in killing Alexander for being dishonorable?
Well, Worf is not an ordinary Klingon, so I would say no.
No. Because he's in the Federation, so he can't just go kill Alexander. But if he was on Kronos, could he? You have act shamefully. I take this fork and kill you.
Ugh. No. No. Oh. You gotta keep in mind, Klingons are still beings that love their children, even though sometimes they drive them up a wall. I know from experience, I have one of them type of kids. You can't keep us in a room longer than 10 minutes before we'd be down each other's throats waiting for the lightsabers to be pulled out for battle.
Lightsabers? Batlers. There you go.
She's a Star Wars nut. I'm a Trekkie, so whatever.
Anyway,
the whole point of it is that they still love their children, even though they drive them nuts. Okay, right. And Alexander is still going through the phase of trying to adapt himself to the other parent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah, I expect him to be more of a pain in the backside than normal. Which I don't know what normal is for a Klingon, but it's got to be pretty bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, because she says, Alexander, what would you like on your side of the contract? No yelling. I do not. I do not yell.
That's my whole point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I thought, well, geez, maybe I'm more Klingon because I yell too at times.
But see, Heidi never understood that. I never yelled at her all the time. I might raise my voice a little when she did something wrong, but I never yelled. There's a difference between me yelling at you, you fat Ferengi, than me saying, now look, Heidi, chill it out. Okay, see my point? But kids right. don't understand that.
Keeps calling me a fat Ferengi, you patah.
Oh, you're lucky I'm not there. I turned that cord into your hangman's noose.
So we agree that a contract is a useless waste of time.
Yes.
Doc, how about you? You're silent.
Well, actually, the thing is, obviously I've got kids. Everyone knows that I've got kids. And I actually thought that Troy was being really sensible here. And, you know, I think, you know, as a 15-year-old or as a, you know, watching this episode, you know, back in the day, I probably would have, you know, hated this scene. But watching these guys and having a Worf squirm and, you know, having Alexander be there and putting his point across, and I quite liked the back and forth with the contract where, you know, Troy was given Worf the overview and he's going like, oh, so this is bribery, is it? And, you know, all of this went down well with me. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. It did?
Yeah, I enjoyed this. I mean, I have
the contract!
I like the interaction between Worf trying his hardest. I think he's legitimately trying his best here. He's completely out of his depth. You've got a little brat of a child, and I thought that Troy was being relatively sensible. Now, we have contracts with our kids. You know, we have, there's a fair amount of stuff that Troy was mentioning in this episode that comes directly out of my wife's mouth as he tries to, you know, organize the kids in order to earn free time once all of the must-dos have been completed. I recognize this straight away.
Really? Okay. All right. Well.
Hey, Doc, do you use uniforms there at the house?
Sorry, pardon me?
What? Uniforms?
Yeah, because it sounds like his house is more like a barracks.
No, I don't think so. All right.
I mean, they do have uniforms for school here.
Okay.
But I don't know. Do you guys have uniform schools for kids? Like you know, even a junior, like 5-year-olds?
Lou, let me answer that for both of us. Doc, this is the freaking United States. There's no such thing as uniforms.
Okay, now let me answer for real. No, not in public schools. There are no uniforms. However, if you go to like a parochial school or a private school, yes, a lot of them do have uniforms. I went to a Catholic grade school, which I had to wear the powder blue and dark pants, can never wear jeans. But public school, no. No, there's no such thing.
Well, there is a slight difference on that. You can't wear stuff like profanity. You can't wear your skirts up to your crotch, and your pants actually have to not have holes in it. And you can't wear gang stuff.
I'll have you know, I've never worn an inappropriate skirt, Doc. It's always been the correct length, always.
Okay, so, just because you wear a kilt.
Does he know most of our audience is somewhere in Scotland?
Yeah.
Stop it! No, it's not. A kilt is a time-honored thing, man. It's nothing to do with each other. We just grew up with that kind of ignorance, but I'm glad we got out of that. Okay, so one thing Deanna does say that is correct, that most children do learn to appreciate their parents. And then, just as soon as she says that, we hear, your mother is aboard.
Yeah, you see this coming a mile away, don't you?
Mm-hmm. On the other hand... Hello, darling! So, okay, generally speaking, Doc, I get the impression that you don't really care for Luoxana. Generally speaking.
No. So it's not that. Growing up, I didn't care for her at all. Now, 20 years later, I think that she's awesome. Mm. And if I could go to the School of Luoxana's, you know, how to enjoy your life, you know, I would. And actually, I think that Major Barrett in this episode is great. I think she's really on top form. And honestly, the performance and her personality came through to the extent that I'm sitting here watching an episode with very little Star Trek in it, with Alexander, who I think is a really annoying character that I'm surprised they didn't try to kill off already, and I'm enjoying it. So, top props to Major Barrett here. I think she's wonderful.
Yeah, I can't figure out who's worse, Alexander or Molly.
Alexander.
Yeah, of course. I mean, really?
Molly's real. Alexander was a written script.
Something about Molly I just never really liked. I don't know why, but okay. So, let's see. Beaming aboard.
I think Nigel actually enjoyed making this episode, be honest and truthfully with you. The way she played her character and everything, I think she actually enjoyed coming into work to do this episode. Okay. Just my opinion.
All right. Well, anyway, beaming aboard is Luoxana Troi, daughter of the fifth chalice of Reeks, heir to the holy rings of Beta Zed, wasn't that daughter of King Roland and the cheeks of the fifth Betazoid? Or... something like that. But she's Deanna's mom, and she's come aboard. Why? Because she wants to get married on the ship. Because apparently she met somebody on Tinder or B-Harmony. You get it? B-Harmony. Beta Zed Harmony. And she was matched up with Capio, which I'm trying to think of a word that... Compazine, maybe, I don't know. Because he might need Compazine or something like that. He's got something up his butt. He's a third minister of the conferences of judges on the planet Constellane.
He's a stiff neck and Luoxana isn't. And I can't believe they matched them two up.
Exactly. And my question is
that's like matching me and Lou up as a couple.
Well, Brian, don't you remember those days when we were together in Iowa?
Yeah,
I've never been to Iowa before. Yeah, we went to Riverside.
Yeah, I know.
I thought I meant something to you all those nights.
You did. Poor baby.
There we go. So I have to ask. When they communicated with each other on Tinder, what the hell did they talk about? Because I would have detected he was a jackass from the start.
Yeah, I agree with you, but they didn't actually talk. They were, from what I understand, they basically put their profile information in and they matched it up without no conversation. And I'm like, you mean to tell me you haven't talked with this jerk yet? I mean, come on, you would have. Either that or she was just because she's being politically nice. But even still, come on, give me a break.
So you're saying that they, chances are they didn't have internet subspace sex talk?
No.
Oh, Compio, would I climb on you?
No, because it was obvious towards the end when she come out naked and he about had a coronary.
I thought it was more like he didn't know what the hell he was looking at. Whoa, I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, right.
Now I got a feeling he never has. She would have been his first, I think. Especially when Urkel was in standing in the way.
Now, guys, unless they're like Bortos's people that all have old males, he would have known what a female looked like, at least, you would think.
Bortos.
What do you mean by that?
Anyway. Oh, yeah. So, are you up to date on the Orville?
Hell yes.
Okay, good. So that little game that they were playing with the little ball they were throwing back and forth to each other, that was hilarious. Oh!
Sounds like a Klingon game to me.
I don't know if he won or if he lost.
He won.
He won, huh? Oh, man.
The object was to get stabbed.
Yeah, but you would think they'd tell him that. Oh, no, that wouldn't be fun.
No, it wouldn't be fun. It wouldn't have been funny for Seth.
No.
That was the comedy of it, was throwing the ball around, because we're thinking it's one thing, and getting stabbed in the hand was the actual set. You win!
Dude, this is a diversion. I know it's like 9 o'clock over in the UK. Doc, you'll be dead soon, I promise. But
we promise we'll stop the BS.
after this one last time. You and I have not talked since the Orville started, I don't believe. I'm pretty certain of that, in fact. Episode one. They go to this planet. They put the guy on screen. And what do you see behind him but a dog licking his balls? I thought, that is absolute most hilarious thing I have seen on TV on anything like a Star Trek in my entire life. And not only do they see it, and it was hard to not watch it, they talk about it. Dude, did you see the dog licking its balls? These are the first thing I noticed. That is some hilarious stuff. And that reminds me of a joke. These two guys were standing there watching a dog lick himself, right? When one says to the other, "Dang, I wish I could do that." And the second one says, "Well, I'm sure he'd let you if you pet him first." Anyway.
Oh, my God.
So,
okay, Lou, we need to get back together. We've missed all the good comedy.
Yes, we do. So, so I don't know where I was here.
We were talking about the, she's arranging for the wedding on the Enterprise, and she just walked on board.
Yes. But then in comes Alexander and Worf, because they're having problems drawing up their contract. They simply can't agree on anything. Because Alexander's being too, I don't know, he's a child thing. And Luaxana just loves the name Alexander. I mean, she's reminded of a handsome warrior that they went everywhere to... Contract? What contract? I mean, this is where I think Luaxana's just been... She's awesome in this one. And there's some moments that I do love her work. But anyway, looks like Counselor Troy is on the job. And I don't mean Deanna. It's time for Luaxana to take care of this boy and get him on the straight and narrow path.
Yeah, so, right. mm-hmm. I'm enjoying this because this is one of the funniest, stupidest shows they had for not having nothing to write about. I think Nigel went in and said, hey, I'm going to do it this way. Give me a basic script, what you want, and we'll just ad-lib through everything. That's when they come up with all these goofy things they had in the Hollow Suite.
Okay. All right. Doc, anything?
Well, Lou, you seem to be holding up a poster saying Majel on it. What was that about?
He keeps calling her Nigel.
Oh, will you quit busting my balls? Man, this man's going to be editing for a week at the rate we're going.
No, that stays.
No, Laxana's verbosity and the fluidity of how she delivers her lines and the interactions she has with Mr. Woof and Alexander—it's all great and it's all so perfectly timed and it comes across as being so clearly sincere in the character. And you know, I don't really like anyone else around the table here, but this is just fun. You know, soon they go onto when they do go onto the holodeck. I remember these kind of really naff holodeck sessions, whether it's here or whether it's on Voyager, where they have Neelix dancing or whatever, and thinking, what the hell are they doing? Do they not realize how terrible and how naff this seems? But in this episode, Laxana's personality and her spirit kind of brought me in to the fact that I didn't really hate it. So, it's not great, the holodeck stuff, right? But I certainly used to hate it, and this time around, I let a lot go, a lot more go than I was expecting.
I'm really not a fan of the holodeck stuff in this one at all. The characters were hokey. The mostly naked dancing woman was. I'm not exactly sure where the hell that fit in anywhere in the story, or even in the holodeck.
It fitted because they used, I guess, a planet where all this stuff goes on all the time, or it's a program she created just for this purpose. Whatever, how they created the sublet, this is her way of showing Alexander to how to enjoy life, basically, how to deal with problems, how to be a kid, I guess, because Worf's got him under such a tight leash, he's about ready to implode on him. Literally. And it also, I guess, reminded Loxana what was important in life, too. I mean, they both taught each other something, and in the end, it showed.
Okay. So, Alexander, when you need to have fun, what you need to do is go get a mud bath and visit a strip club.
Is that what most men do anyway? That's a joke, by the way, guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, I got a feeling you and I may have been to a strip club, but I think that's where that ends. Doc, you want to chime in on that one?
Yeah, I'll happily volunteer that I've never been to a strip club.
Okay, next time you get here.
And certainly not with my mother-in-law, which effectively is what Laxana Troi is to... Actually, not mother-in-law, grandmother-in-law, what she is to Alexander.
Actually, she's not even that. She's not even that. Troi and Worf never got married.
No, sure.
They had that... Troi and Worf had that bond, right, in terms of that if anything were to happen to me when he had his back surgery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, she's kind of like taking on this grandmotherly role, Things that she probably never let Deanna do, she's going to let Alexander have fun. And if it annoys his father, so much the better. Yeah. So, I think Mrs. Troi goes to visit Deanna, but she finds Alexander there, and they have a nice moment together in which Alexander says he hates Worf, and he's also sad about his mother dying. Now, this is kind of one of the two moments of this episode that are really kind of nice. They're really kind of sweet, because look at her face when he says, but she died. And, you know, she says, yeah, it ain't fair, is it? And she, you know, she has to chase back a tear, which really, okay, let's talk about that moment. Let's go forward in her quarters when, she, you know, he's looking at this wedding dress that she's supposed to wear. And why are you doing this? And he's not a nice man. And that's when she goes into this whole thing of, you know, she's alone and, you know, when you do get older and you can no longer pick and choose from whatever may come your way, then you do what we call compromise, and it keeps you from being afraid. And I thought those were two of the best moments of this episode, certainly, if not even maybe this season, of having her talk, because this has nothing to do with this episode. It doesn't even have anything to do with this series. This is all for Gene. Do you guys agree?
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
I agree. No argument. No argument from the Klingon cheap seats.
So, you know, that's some pretty, you know, there's some pretty nice moments that, you know, I got to tell you, choke me up every time I see them because I know what it's for. If the casual person who may be watching this show that doesn't know anything about Gene Roddenberry, doesn't know what he did, doesn't know that he even created this or that she was married to him, It'd be meaningless, wouldn't it? Because the first time I watched this episode, I didn't know who she was. I didn't even know she was Christine Chapel. I didn't know she was married to him. Didn't mean anything. Now it does.
Yeah, no argument from there. But I think she was. She used her pain of Gene's loss to kind of put it in perspective for Loxana.
Yeah,
and what she's feeling.
Yeah, because he had died 3 months before, maybe 4 months before filming this. And you figure 2-3 months since the the script was written after he died. So, yeah, I mean, she's still hurting. She's still in pain 4 months later, and I think maybe even a year later. So I could see she really... It's a great app. These are great moments for her, so I really like it.
Well, like I said, this is one of these shows where they just threw a bunch of things. Like you said, they pulled A and B and threw it into a pot and said this is a show. Mm-hmm. And she kind of actually made it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because the one I rated before it was just dry. This one wasn't dry. The characters in the hologram were, I agree with you, skeptical at best.
Yeah.
But they served a purpose. And she used them as a purpose to show Alexander's stuff. So, in a sense, they actually did have purpose in the holosuite, but it was in a comical way.
Mm-hmm. Don't you love it when Majel Barrett talks to herself? You know,
I think it's some of the greatest stuff put on TV is when Roxana interacts with the computer and also when she's talking to herself and the way that she behaves around the technology and how, I mean, she's clearly, you know, not uncomfortable, but she puts across this air of being very uncomfortable as she goes through the scene. There's even the thing I like is that the first thing you see that there's something potentially wrong is when Roxana tries to get tea, and she doesn't get tea, but she gets, you know, sausages in the teapot. And I love the fact that Roxana distrusts technology so much that she accepts this as, oh, it's one of those stupid things these computers do. And she doesn't bat an eyelid. She takes the sausages out. She still drinks the tea. Yeah. And she doesn't flag it as like, look, there's a serious problem here. It's for her, it's just like, oh, crazy computer, what are you going to do? And that attitude towards technology is just so endearing from this character.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they do get into the issue next scene, so obviously Deanna reported it to somebody.
But they mentioned they had multiple reports.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Okay, so she goes back, takes him to the holodeck to the Colony of Free Spirits to get a mud bath. And what is a lesson for today?
Never take a mud bath with Loxana. You'll get lost.
Yeah.
In time.
You know what's funny? It was interesting is I could see Brian Bozzol is his name. Do you realize, have you ever seen this kid without makeup?
No.
He is plain white.
Yeah, I never realized he was white, by the way.
Oh, he's very white. He was on, what was that show that was Michael J. Fox was on?
Was he the one that just recently passed away?
No. That was the original actor that played Alexander. So the one played him in Reunion. I did see a couple of tweets went out that kind of got those two actors confused, and some people thought that it was this Alexander that had passed. But it was actually unfortunately it was the younger Alexander.
I'm trying to think. Family Ties. Is that it? Yeah, he played on Family Ties as Michael J. Fox's younger brother.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah, actually, he was also in a movie called Blank Check, where he finds a blank check, makes it out for $1 million, and spends the money. But yeah, that boy is pure white. And I think when he was in the mud bath, part of him actually got wet and some of the makeup came off, because you could see right under his chest, that boy is white. But that's cool.
Why does it matter?
It doesn't. I just don't understand why they make Klingons black. Or dark, I should say. Not black,
well,
dark.
Normally they are. Most of them are dark skin. It just depends on what sector of the Klingon Empire they come from. Like Gorkon and his daughter were both white. Mm-hmm. Okay, they weren't the dark-skinned Klingon that we were used to seeing. According to the people who handle Klingon science and stuff, it just depends on what planet they come from. If you ever look at me, you never see me dark-skinned at all. I'm light-skinned mm-hmm. as well. So it just depends on what region of the Klingon Empire you belong to.
Okay.
Hang on. So, quick question, Brian. So, what's up with Discovery then?
I can't answer that since I refuse to watch it.
Yeah, he refuses to watch it because he doesn't want to pay the all access fee. Which I've had all access fee for a long time. I gladly pay it. Number one, I don't have cable. I don't have satellite. We cut the satellite almost 2 years ago. So really, I pay $11.95 a month for unlimited on-demand CBS with no commercials because I like Big Bang Theory. I like Discovery. I love the After Trek. There's a lot of things on CBS that I go for. So there's more to it than just the Discovery. But
the Klingons don't contract STDs.
You're funny, and I bet they do. They just nobody knows about it because they kill them. You have what? So anyway, but no, you really okay. If I could find a way to get these episodes to you, I think I will because you really are missing something. It's a fairly, you know. Here's a question for you. Do you remember when Picard visited the Mentakans and they accidentally revealed themselves to him and he became the Picard and he had to tell them why they were observing him that way? He said, well, you know, disastrous first contact with the Klingons resulted in several hundred thousand years of war or whatever. Well, Discovery in the first episode, they make contact with the Klingons. Now, let's forget the fact that Archer also made contact because Kirk was the first? I don't know.
Bypass all the silly stuff. I saw the one they opened up with where she accidentally killed the person that was supposed to negotiate with them. Okay, I saw that episode. And I thought the show was decent, but it wasn't decent enough for me to sit and spend money to watch it when I had the Orville, which was a whole lot better, and was free. Okay? Yeah. I mean... We've had our differences, and believe you me, I've been, if anyone stood up for the underdog, anytime we, like J.J. Abrams Star Trek, okay, Lou was so adamant against it, Brian was the one that defended it. Now, this time around, no. I'm sorry, I cannot defend what Paramount did. If Paramount really wanted to be one of the fans that enjoyed Discovery, they wouldn't have put it on their all access. I'm sorry. They're just being greedy, and that's the bottom line fact. And I just don't. I just refuse to watch it.
I agree with that. It's bad
because I love the actors that they got for the captains and stuff. I really loved those character actors they got for it. I mean, if you know anything about Kung Fu movies, the first captain, you should know her really well. Okay, should I give you Crouching Tiger? What is it? Hidden Dragon? Whatever that. Crouching.
You said
Tiger.
It right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a biggie. I mean, I'd watch her on almost any episode if she was in Star Trek, but not at the rate of giving Paramount money back from their stupid lawsuit. I'm sorry, I just don't agree with it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she is on the first two episodes, and she gets killed off, but don't worry, she comes back. Okay. So the higher... the fewer. Hearing that once was bad enough, but we had to hear it twice again. Alexander, as he does it to the holographic characters, cartoon characters. And then the second one was to Worf. Now that was funnier because he was intentionally trying to irritate the hell out of Worf. You know, I told Miss Troy I was going to meet with her. You don't want me to break my word, do you, Father?
No Klingon ever breaks his word.
Well, then I got to go.
No, you don't break your word later. You eat.
But then it was the, ha! 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 It's a laughing hour. And then he gives him the, Father, the higher, the fewer. And the only thing that makes that funny is when he walks out and Worf takes his lettuce or something. That's why I said, could he have killed him at that moment for being dishonorable?
Nope. That's just a frustrated parent.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I know what a frustrated parent is.
Oh, I know what a frustrated parent. What about you, Doc? Aren't you a frustrated parent like six times over, seven times over?
No, I'm very calm.
Yeah, he is. Wait. Father, you're not being fair, Father.
Let me come to London and go find that out.
So wait a second, Doc. Hold on. How old's your oldest?
13, coming on 14 this year.
Good. That's a great example. Boy or girl?
Girl.
That's great even there, too. Doesn't she hate the fact that she's got all these other kids? She has no privacy. Blah, blah, blah. Doesn't she have a lot of drama?
Not really, no. She's a good girl.
I think we need to put Doc on a reality show to see what life is really like in the Roberts house. Because if it's like this house...
If it was like my house...
Yeah, exactly.
You mean to tell me you got a 14-year-old girl living in the house and you don't have no back and forth?
None at all. She doesn't hate when you make these rules. Nothing makes sense.
No, certainly nothing. You know, she doesn't. It's, you know, obviously people complain about not having enough free time to do whatever they want to do, and stuff. But generally, certainly no. Like, you know, I don't think she's ever shouted at her parents. She sometimes gets frustrated with the little kids, her brothers, and will kind of like shout them down. But then that's because, you know, everyone's like making a lot of noise and they're overly excited. But yeah, never turned. So my sister, when she was growing up, she would often, you know, shout down at my mum and dad, and she said, "Yeah, I hate you." Ah! But no, we never had that. Well, we haven't had that yet.
It's a coming, Doc. Get ready.
Yeah. You never know. Yeah, right. once those teenage hormones kick in, you're going to go, who the hell are you? Okay, so anyway. Let's see.
God,
anyway.
I never thought I'd hear myself say I'm the eldest statesman between the three of us. I've already went through it and getting ready to try it again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, these holodeck scenes kind of send shards of pain through my head. I got to be honest. I really don't care for them at all. But Worf is finding clothing and toys under the sofa. Again, Worf, you know, he's just being a kid. And then Deanna walks in.
Wait a minute, isn't Alexander with you?
That's good parenting, isn't it? You know, doesn't know where he is. She don't know where he is. Maybe he went out at airlock somewhere.
Okay, hypothetical question here to everybody. Now, you tell me that Worf wasn't like that when he was living with the Reshenkos?
Yes, because when he came running in, he knocked over that lamp.
I mean,
well, I don't remember you smiling when I knocked over the lamp.
I mean, did he not put toys under the couch, too? Come on, give me a break.
You would think so. Yeah. Yeah. You would think so.
Okay,
but he expects too much.
Human kids and Klingon kids seem to act the same way, all right? Give me a break.
Yeah. There was one moment on the holodeck I thought was, I just laughed out loud hysterically. That's when Worf and Deanna walk in and the bubble face comes up. And boom, boom. he pops the bubble. That was hysterical. Okay.
Yeah, that was.
So, as if all this wasn't bad enough, we get to learn some horrifyingly terrible news. Compio sent his mother's wedding dress to Luoxana, and that's not even the bad part. She's planning to wear it and not go naked to her own wedding.
Oh, my God.
Now, wait a second. Let's flash forward a few years. Deanna gets married to Will Riker. Was she naked?
Yes.
Unfortunately, no. Was she? On Star Trek, whatever the name of that...
Nemesis.
Yeah, Nemesis, that terrifying movie, terrible movie is. She wasn't naked.
Well, I mean, that was the reception rather than the wedding.
Right. Picard made a statement to Worf that, yes, you will be there, and yes, you will be naked. And then he said, I got to run to the gym and work out.
Something like that. Yes, because, yeah, remember now, Picard says, young, strapping, handsome men like you. My word. Yeah, I remember now. Okay, yeah, they were planning to do that.
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
By what we know at the time, yes, the wedding was naked.
Okay. That's why everyone hung around for a potential after the credit scene at the end of that episode, at the end of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But alas, never happened.
Oh, you're right. That would have been great, having the credits roll up and have them come down with her naked.
And also Riker would have been naked for those who may be interested.
Can you imagine how that goes?
No.
I can't see Jonathan Frank doing a naked scene. Hell, he had barely had enough decency to try one when he was doing the bathroom and the bedroom scenes in the show and the movies.
Well, actually, the men on the ship would have been looking at Deanna with their tongues wagging. Let's face that. That would have been good. The women, on the other hand, on the ship wouldn't have cared less because they've already seen Wrecker naked. You know, show me something I haven't seen already. Yep. Show me something I haven't seen already. So, anyway.
Sounds like my punchline when I'm at the hospital.
Yeah. Okay, so the A storyline or the B storyline, I'm not exactly sure, but it turns out the computer is having a really bad day. We haven't even discussed this yet. Things are breaking down. The computer's having a terrible day, and everything important, nitrium, I believe it is turning to jello. So, do you guys even much care about that plot line? Could we just say they had to fix it, and they did, and go on about the rest of the story?
Well, so, Lou, neither myself nor Brian remember it. So, okay. I think we can, it's, you know, it is what it is. I think it does nothing. I mean,
they picked up some dust along the way.
They picked up some dust, and dust is dangerous.
Yes. It's a life form of some kind. It's going through the ship, eating things because it's hungry. And we need to get it back to that area to let them feed on whatever they were feeding on before they were feeding on them. So let's get back there. Oh, and while they're en route, things are starting to break down. They're not sure if they're going to make it. Everybody passes out. Data fixes the situation. Everybody comes back to life, and everything's good. Now.
Okay, hang on. One thing, though, Lou. One thing.
Huh?
They try to solve the situation by putting breadcrumbs out. Say, oh, over here, there's more nitrium. Now, could they not have just replicated nitrium, put it outside the ship, and then, like, warped away quickly? And if the argument here is that, well, they didn't, wouldn't be able to replicate enough nitrium, then could you not just have, like, the beam go out with nitrium and say, over here, there's nitrium, put the, you know, put the breadcrumbs, and then just not have the asteroid there. You know, the life form would be outside the ship, and again, warp away before he realizes that you've tricked him.
Mm-hmm. Fooled
you. Well, the asteroid, I think the asteroid they picked, it was full of nitrium, and they had to make it go over to that asteroid again.
Yeah, but you know, by the time the life form is like 3/4 of the way there, you could just warp away. You don't need to, you know. You're not enticing him over. He doesn't see that it's nitrium. Well, maybe he does. Maybe he's well aware of where he's been pointed to. Yeah, he's got a sense of smell.
Yeah. Must be. So personally, I could care less, but that's a different story. Okay, so Mr. Holm, 7 feet tall and never talks. All right, he does say something, but I don't remember at one point. He says a couple words.
I like it when Alexander comes in, knocks on the door, Mr. Holm answers, and he's literally 2.5 times his size in terms of height, let alone kind of, like, you know, weight or anything.
That's... 2.5, try about 5.5.
Mm. Yeah, because you figure Alexander's what, 3 feet tall?
If that. So,
if that. I mean, that boy is small. He is one tiny dude.
Well, you put him up against Worf, right? And you put him up against Mr. Holm, so that, you know, those are like on the taller end of most people.
Oh yeah, I may remember when Alexander first came on board and they were walking down the corridor, and I think he went up to Alexander's knee, or Alexander went up to Worf's knees or something. I mean, it was something like really a difference there. Okay, so let's see. We finally get to meet Compio. You know, you figure the way he, when he was standing on the transporter pad with a smile, he seemed like a fairly nice guy. But his aide, Jerko, okay, Erko, but hey, let's agree that we're going to call him Jerko.
Okay, we agree. By the way, the guy who's playing the minister is a very good noted character actor.
Okay, tell us more.
Well, I've seen him in various television shows and minor roles in movies. He's basically noted for his character acting.
Huh. Tony J.
Mm-hmm. Usually in the B movie category.
Ah, he's an English actor. He was born in London. Hey. Well, he actually died in Los Angeles in 2006, but I was going to say, James, why don't you go take a run past his house? Take a picture of you in front of his house, do a selfie, and we'll put it online. I was at the Compio's house.
Are you aware that, I don't know if I mentioned this, but you know Picard's brother?
Robert.
Yeah, Robert. So he's an English actor, and he lived up the road from where we used to live in London. So I didn't meet him or didn't run into him, but like a lady that used to work for my family's business knew him, and he lived nearby.
Well, I wonder if he was as crotchety as he is in that episode.
I'm not sure. I suspect he must be dead as well now.
Of course, he died in a fire. He burned to death in a fire. But, you know, really, he couldn't have been. He can't be from London. He, after all, Robert is French. Okay, so.
Must be.
Yes. I guess they can't find Frenchmen, so they use Englishmen to try to replace Frenchmen.
Well, look what they do to Porthos. You know, they can't even say Porthos is a her. Which, you know, Prada and I can't remember the other dog's name. They had like two or three Porthoses, and they were all girls. So anyway.
By the way, I'm going to have to take it back, because the, yeah, Jeremy Kemp, who does play Robert Picard, is alive at the age of 83.
Hmm. He's probably still singing. Oh, crap. Anyway.
Yeah,
so,
look at his movie credits. He's done quite a bit of acting, too, over his years.
Campio. Seems like a nice guy, but is Eric Jaco. Jerko steps in the way of a nice sloppy kiss. Oh, no, we can't have that, no. And also, she is not to address the minister in the familiar. So,
I find that quite funny, because she ends up just calling him Minister Darling, which I kind of think kind of negated the point. That's not... You know, if you're not trying to be familiar with someone, just using the title and then, you know, saying darling afterwards is not really what you had in mind.
Mm-mm. The minister and the Jerko. I love the Jerko part.
Hey, let's take Jerko and Mr. Holmes and throw them in an arena and see who wins.
That's easy enough.
Yeah, but it'd be fun watching Mr. Holmes beat the crap out of me.
I don't think he would have to. I don't think he would have to. I think Urko or Jerko would kill himself trying to attack Mr. Holm.
You mean like Stormtrooper?
Yeah. Yeah. So back on the holodeck, the juggler ate his worlds. Everybody ate their styrofoam cups, which I didn't get at all. Was that supposed to be like a sugar cone?
Something about that teaching Alexander a lesson about something, I guess. Who knows?
By eating their cup. That makes sense. Okay. Let's see. Laughing Hour. We discussed Laughing Hour. No Klingon ever breaks his word. Don't address him in the familiar. Back on the holodeck, the juggler eats his world. Stupid. I even put that stupid. If you have a world... Don't eat it.
Why? It's more fun.
Yeah, it's pretty tasty.
Yeah,
I mean,
then you get the title of Destroyer of Worlds.
There you go, Alexander, Destroyer of Worlds. So the rest of the story is pretty standard. They figure out how to save the ship before everybody dies. Good enough. So now the wedding.
Da 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 da
da da. No, it's dun dun da da da. But they never get that far, because as soon as she walks in, Capio's, I think, you know, he's a little titillated, maybe. Kind of, he's like, I might get some for the first time in my life there. But the Jerko is flabbergasted and, you know, covers Capio's eyes and just ushers him out the door. What were they planning to do on, you know, say, their wedding night?
What wedding night?
Right. But the first time Campio and Luoxana end up in their bed, is Jerko going to be there?
Jerko going to be there and say, hey, you put your nightgown back on, woman.
Minister, she should not be on top. God.
Minister, okay. She should be in her own bedroom.
Yes, yes, yes. Do not have the woman in your bed. And he'll do it, too. That's the worst part.
Yeah, he's playing a stupid guy.
Yeah, yeah. So you're petting your space cat.
Yeah, I'm petting the new one. Bobo.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that's the nickname he's got. He's actually Bobcat because he looks like a Bobcat.
Ah.
A little lynx.
Okay.
13 pounds, okay. Lou. He's got more belly on. He's got more belly than you do.
I guess per square inch, maybe, but other than that, no. Okay, so the show ends on the holodeck with a mud bath for Loxana and Alexander again. And this time, Worf is in there. Why in the hell is Worf all the way up to his chin in mud?
Because he can't understand why he's got to be in there in the first place. That and his makeup will start showing if he raises his neck up any higher.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Deanna was in there as well, and...
Yeah, you got a little cleavage shot.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Lou.
No, nothing poor about it. She's looking pretty nice in that there.
Well, back then but when then she did the show, she was hot.
Yeah, she was.
It's like Jerry Taylor was when she was in Voyager. She was hot.
So I'm going to have to come here to the defense of these ladies and say, what do you mean was? Don't say was. I'm
Jerry Ryan.
Jerry Ryan. Thank you. Sorry.
But what? I mean, Jerry Ryan's a... Don't say was. Was is not appropriate to say was.
Well, Jerry's still hot. I know. The other one is gotten a little older and a little...
Oh, Kate Mulgrew?
No.
Oh, no, Kate has changed.
Oh, yeah, she's definitely changed.
Actually, can I just mention one thing about Kate Mulgrew, just very quickly? This is a tangent, but, you know, and I know how much of a shock there will be to people that they, that we are actually going to go on a tangent. But because of Star Trek Discovery, I've had to subscribe to Netflix because that's the way you get it in the UK. And on Netflix, they have the Star Trek documentary that William Shatner did about the captains called The Captains. And my goodness me, we can talk about it another day, maybe in more detail, but all of the actors that played the captains are really very, very interesting. And I have to say that, you know, the interview that he had with Kate Mulgrew and that kind of discussion, I thought was absolutely fascinating. Kate Mulgrew is one of my favorite people out of the out of the Star Trek cast or the Star Trek universe. She really comes across very nicely. Anyway, that was just my tangent.
Well, yeah, the others are kind of full of themselves. It all starts with the guy who is ultimately full of himself.
One thing you noticed in this particular documentary, William Shatner has obviously been given, you know, questions to ask. And there's a bit where he would, you know, almost go up to Patrick Stewart and say, oh, so how did you get into acting? And then Patrick Stewart would say, well, I had an English teacher that introduced me to Shakespeare. And then William Shatner would turn around and then basically give like a 20-minute monologue about, oh, that's very interesting, Patrick, but I'm going to have to tell you about myself. And he does this thing where he just, every single interview he gives, he just turns it around and talks about himself.
By the way, he does that on his own television show, too, with Harry Winkler and all them.
I mean, I have no idea if he's aware of this or if it's just a nervous tick or if he's just that kind of person. But it's, you know, he tries to interview and he doesn't let the other people speak. And he just ends up, whatever they say, he kind of turns it around and then he gives an example about, you know, how he's been like that or maybe he's better or whatever. It's really weird when you notice it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think he does. He knows. Because it's the world revolves around him. He's Denny Crane. Okay, so I guess you're supposed to just sit there in the mud bath. And that's pretty much all I've got. What about you guys? Got anything?
I mean, I'd happily sit there in the mud bath with the two Troy ladies. What, you know, and you know, what's wrong with that?
Nothing. No, I've got two legs. Each one can, you know, take a seat right there.
Kaboom! Splash! I go, baby. Yeah, I'll sit there and argue with Worf the whole time.
No, he's just sitting there like, what do I do?
Why am I
just
in
watch?
Here?
Yeah, just watch, Worf. Here, I'll show you what to do. Anyway, So I guess it's time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode, on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. It's okay. It isn't the greatest episode. There are some funny moments in those two very, very charming, sweet moments that I've told you about that had nothing to do with the story. I think this is one of Majel Barrett's... This is her one and only time to say goodbye on the show that he created. So, that's we all agree there. So, I, for one, you know, I'm always moved by those two moments. I don't know what it does for you guys, but I like these kind of moments in Star Trek. There are some very funny scenes here, especially with, you know, the Compio beams on board, and we see what an ass he is. And
no, we must not be familiar.
Obviously, he would have been the minister of their marriage, and she would have been his royal servant. Let's see. So, obviously, she does the right thing when she torpedoes the entire wedding and shows up naked. Let's see here. Do you think, I don't know, I guess we didn't ask this, but when she came in naked, do you think Alexander might have been traumatized by what he saw?
Nah.
Of her being naked?
Nah.
I don't know. Well, considering his contribution to Star Trek in future episodes, I'm not so sure. Namely, DS9 when he's a ship's fool. I don't know. Alexander, I think the writers didn't do Alexander right, and even when they went into DS9, they said, well, we've screwed this character up. We might as well just go for broke.
Yeah, but the books make it up big time.
Oh, see, and I never got into the books.
You got to read the Left Hand of Justice, the one JG wrote.
Gotcha. So, I was actually thinking the story as it is probably a 2. It's not the best. It's not that great. However, I am absolutely floored by Majel Barrett. This is her moment, and she so shines. And I think she gets even better as time goes on, even when she gets to DS9. I think she's a fine wine. She just gets finer and finer as she gets her contribution goes. So I think she adds. I'm going to give her 1.5 extra points. So I'm going to end this episode on 3.5. And I think that's saying something, because if she hadn't been there and she hadn't done the scenes that she did, it would not have gotten a 1.5 boost. So I'm going to go with 3.5. Brian, I should have let you start first, but I just kept reading.
Oh, that's all right.
Why don't you tell us?
That's all right. You're fine, bro. Well, you know cool. What? Other than I forgot about the nitrate issue with the replicators and how they had to get the beans to move over to something a little bit bigger to eat than the ship, I thought that the whole purpose of that was to teach Alexander how to look at life a little bit differently, and it helped Loxana remember what life is instead of just trying to find She realized now that maybe I don't need a husband, or I really do have companionship, and I'm not as lonely as I thought I was. Overall, I actually was going to give it a 3.5, 3.5 stars, because it definitely was an entertaining show, despite the fact it was about nothing. I mean, it's absolutely about nothing, just a standard day on the ship. Okay, with a few little problems added in, I almost think the asteroid part was supposed to be the main part, and then Loxana basically took over the show after that. Right. And it moved away from what the actual problem was.
Okay, so you're good with your 3.5?
I'm very good with my 3.5.
Okay.
What about you, Doc?
Yeah.
Okay, so everyone hold on to their hats here, because I just really enjoyed watching this, and I don't know why. And I did 2 episodes of Discovery back-to-back, and then I come over to TNG, and TNG is such a safe, nice space where everything is just so warm and cuddly. I'm going to give this, this episode, I think Major Barrett is absolutely wonderful. As I've got older, I've really warmed to her character. I think her performance in this episode is absolutely fantastic. I'm giving this is going to be a 4 out of 5 from me, and that's plus 3 on Major Barrett. Without Major Barrett, this doesn't come anywhere. It's just such it's such a feel-good episode. Horrendous bad things, right? Don't like Alexander, don't like all of the holodeck stuff. Sometimes people can get a bit frustrated with Troy just repeating the same Troy-like things. We have Roxana Troy once a season, and then once a season we have the same jokes put on in the same way as she clashes with Deanna and the like. But I don't know, this episode, there's something about the performance and the warmth of this episode that really kind of brought me in this time around. I'm absolutely shocked. Had you asked me like ahead of time, I would have thought about this would be maybe a 2 or so, because I do know the significance of the performance, certainly with respect to Gene Roddenberry's passing. And it would have been more along the lines of that, I hate the episode, but I'll respectfully give it, or respectfully acknowledge what they were trying to do. But I watched this and I had just so much fun. So I don't know. I think I've gone crazy. 4 out of 5 for me.
Okay. 4 out of 5 for you.
The whole synopsis is, it wasn't about nothing, but it was very enjoyable from all views of all three, mm-hmm. three different views. We all liked the show very well, despite the fact it was about, really wasn't about anything per se.
No.
Okay.
No.
But we all agree that Roxana Troy stole the show. We all totally agree on that point.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. Well, then, I guess that's the end of this one. So we're 20 episodes into the season. I want to do an idea of what our ratings are averaging so far. After the 20th episode, let's see, I'm at 3.45, Doc, you're at 3.4, and the guests still love Star Trek more than we do at 3.8.
What can I say? Okay. The guests know what we're talking about.
That's right. And next week, I'm sure the ratings will be just as similar when we talk about episode 21, The Perfect Mate.
Oh my god. I'm staying out of that one.
I predict that we are going to love that episode and give it one of our highest ratings possible. Doc, how about you?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll have to find out then. Okay.
A beautiful seductress comes to life.
Kamala is the key to peace between our two worlds.
A woman destined to end years of war.
You learn so quickly what stimulates a man.
And determined to satisfy forbidden desires.
Don't do this. This you do with men.
But will Picard sacrifice peace for passion?
Would you ask me to stay and ask 2 armies to keep fighting?
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
So everyone join us next week as we review episode 21, The Perfect Mate. And we will have Chris Johnson. Chris the Rock Johnson on for that one. So everyone, take care and good night.
Good night.
Come
Thank you, Brian.
Everybody.